and his voice is different from before. Still his own, but stronger, faster, more forceful. A sharp edge on stone. We look back at him, perplexed. At least I am. Maven looks torn between murderous fury and... hope? The man grins.
"Have you missed me?"
he says.
"I think you have."
I hear bone on bone, grinding teeth. Maven clenches his jaw and forces out a single word.
Mare.
14. Mare. He knows it's you. We all seem to inhale at the same time, and my breath feels ragged. Suddenly, the small room tucked away in the Samos Palace is much too tight. On instinct, my eyes snap to Farley. She stares back at me. Her throat works, swallowing hard, and I trace the action. She steals before my eyes, hardening with determination. I bite my lip and wish I could do this alone, but she isn't going anywhere, standing over Ibram, close enough to stop if things get beyond my control. Ibram's eyes burn into mine, alight and intense as his mind bridges the divide between Ridge House and Piedmont. He already vomited out as much information as he could about the prison on the Piedmont base, the bunker half buried with east-facing windows, which prisoners his brother can see, exactly who he's captured with, who he saw die, who he saw escape. To my relief, Ella and Rafe were among the survivors who made it into the swamps. That intelligence alone was vital, but this, Maven, right in front of us, so close I feel like I could almost reach out and touch him. I want to see what Ibram sees. I want to tip forward, plunge through the russet depths of his eyes, and emerge in the matching pair, staring out of a cell hundreds of miles away. Look Maven in the face again. Read him as I know I can. Every tick and pull of muscle under skin. The smallest flashes across ice-blue eyes, speaking of secrets and weaknesses he tries to bury. Ibram's connection to his brother will have to do. Their bond is strong despite the distance. Almost immediate. Ibram describes everything he senses through rash as it comes.
Maven is approaching the bars. He's leaning in, inches away. There's sweat on his neck. It's hot in Piedmont. It just rained.
Ibram tightens before me, laying his palms flat on his thighs. He draws back, and I imagine Maven right here in the room with us, crowding into his face. Ibram's lip curls in distaste.
He's searching us. Our eyes.
I flinch and feel the cold phantom of familiar breath on my skin. In spite of the sunlight streaming in through the single window, I feel darkness pool in this small, forgotten room hidden in Ridge House. I wish I'd never thought of this, had never summoned Ibram to do this. He was supposed to be our link to Tahir and Davidson, an easy connection to Montfort, not to his other brother, captured in Piedmont, not to Maven. I force myself to keep still, locking my muscles and my expression, but my heart gallops in my chest, rising to a dull, constant thud. Farley tries not to pace, and her odd lack of activity makes me even more nervous than I already am. This place disagrees with both of us. Ridge House seems like little more than a trap, waiting to be sprung. Every room has metal in some form, beamed or columned, or even woven into the floor itself. The house is a weapon only a few can wield, and they surround us at all times. Even the chair beneath me is cold steel. I shiver where it touches my bare skin. The knock on the door makes us both jump, startled out of our skin. I whirl, teeth clenched, to see the knob turn, catching fast against a lock. Farley crosses to the door in two long strides, ready to turn away whatever servant or snooping noble waits on the other side. To my dismay, she throws the door wide and steps back, allowing a broad, familiar silhouette to step into the room. I all but snarl at her, my fists clenching on my knees. "What are you doing?" I hiss, my voice low and firm. Tiberius glances between Farley and me,
as if weighing the two of us, which female frightens him more. I was invited, he says thickly, and we are going to be extremely late for a council meeting. Then go. I dismiss him with a wave, turning on Farley. What are you doing? I force through gritted teeth. She cuts me off with the sharp slam of the door. You know Maven, but so does he, she says with cold efficiency. Let him listen. In front of me, Ibram blinks. Miss Barrow, he says, prodding for us to continue. As if this weren't stressful enough. Fine, I mutter through gritted teeth, turning back to face the Montfort Newblood. I do my best to ignore the other Calor, now leaning against the wall to put as much space between us as he can. His foot taps in the corner of my eye in a burst of nervous energy. Maven is saying something, Ibram murmurs, his natural voice soft and halting. It shifts quickly into the best impression he can make of Maven. How are we speaking right now? He says, the words suddenly cruel and sharp. He even forces a cold laugh. It's a good likeness. Or are you just trying to toy with a king, Red? Not a good decision, I'm afraid. Ibram shifts again, his eyes darting, seeing across the miles. He has guards, sentinels, six of them. Prince Bracken and his children just passed through as well, with four guards of their own. Tiberius says something behind his hand, and Farley nods, adding to the count of hostiles, probably. Firm alliance with Bracken, I hear Tiberius mutter. They'll strike again, and soon. The queen is with him, Ibram continues. The Lakelander princess. She isn't speaking, just standing, watching. Ibram narrows his eyes. Her face is blank. She almost seems frozen. Tell Iris, I stumble, tapping my fingers together. They must be convinced. Irrevocably sure it's me speaking through the brotherly bond. Tell her all dogs bite. All dogs bite, Iris. Ibram repeats. He tips his head as I tip mine, imitating me now, a common girl with an uncommon life. The truth unsettles Maven as much as anything, and I must unsettle him if I'm to get anything out of this exchange. The queen is smirking. She nods her head, Ibram says. He shifts into an impression of Iris, his voice climbing an octave. All dogs bite, but some dogs wait, Mare Barrow. And what is that supposed to mean? Farley grumbles into her hand. But I know. I'm just a well-dressed and tightly leashed lapdog, I told Iris once, during my imprisonment. She smirked then, too. Even lapdogs bite, she replied. Will you? I'm finally free to answer, and so is she. Iris Signet is waiting for her own opportunity to strike. I wonder if she has the Lakelands behind her, or just her own rage. I glance over my shoulder, looking to Farley. It's something she said to me in Archeon, before I came back. It's definitely her, but how, I can't say, Ibram continues, relaying Iris's voice the best he can. This must be some new blood ability we don't know yet. What you don't know could fill an ocean, I reply. About Montfort, about the Scarlet Guard. It feels shameful, dirty even, to jab like this, but I do it easily. About your brother? He's standing right next to me, you know. Ibram sneers, mimicking Maven. Is that supposed to mean something? I think there may be a tremor of fear in the echoed words. I have little regard for who you decide to stand next to, though, he adds, and his sneer curves into a wicked smile. I understand you aren't standing next to him much anymore. I force a smile, using it to mask my wince. Good to know you have spies in our coalition, I say boldly, although nowhere near as many as we have in yours. A laugh like nails on glass bursts from Ibram. You think I waste my spies on tracking your emotions, Mare? No, my darling. I just know you better than anyone else. He laughs again, showing white eye teeth. I focus on the scar on Ivorum's chin to keep a picture of Maven's beautiful, haunted, hissing face out of my head.
I knew you wouldn't stomach it when Cal showed who he truly was.
At the edge of my vision, Tiberius doesn't move, doesn't even breathe. He keeps his eyes lowered, intent on glaring a hole in the floor.
He is created as much as I am, made by our father, molded, and broken into that walking, talking brick wall you thought you loved so well.
Maven pushes on, speaking through Ivorum.
He hides behind that shield he calls duty, but the truth is less noble. Cal is made of want, same as the rest of us, but he wants the crown. He wants the throne, and no price is too high to pay, no blood too valuable to spill. A snap rips through the air as Cal cracks a single knuckle with his thumb.
We always come back to the same conversation, Maven, I grumble, leaning back with exaggerated nonchalance. Ivorum mirrors my motions. I wonder, Iris, does he whine about Tiberius as much to you, or am I the only one who has to deal with this nonsense? Ivorum turns his head, as if looking to Iris.
Her lips twitched. Perhaps a smile? He reports. Maven is shifting, putting an arm to the bars. The temperature is rising.
Did I strike a nerve? I ask. Oh, I forgot. You don't know which nerves are even yours and which are hers.
With a grimace, Ivorum smacks his open palms on his thighs. Maven hit the bars. The temperature is still rising. The other prisoners are doing their best to watch.
The new blood blinks, flaring his nostrils, forcing heavy breaths.
He's trying to calm himself.
It isn't wise to antagonize someone with so many hostages at his disposal. I could let them all burn if I wanted.
Maven hisses through gritted teeth. I can smell his shaking anger from hundreds of miles away.
It would be easy to report that there were no survivors of Bracken's glorious reclamation of his lands.
It's true. There is nothing to stop Maven from murdering every prisoner in sight. They live on his whims alone, leaving an intricate needle for me to thread.
Or you could free them.
Maven barks a surprised laugh. I think you need to get more sleep, Mare.
In a trade, of course. I glance up at Farley, weighing her expression. Her brows twitch, knitting together in thought. I see Tiberius pale, too. The last time we brokered a trade with Maven, I ended up imprisoned for months on end.
Because that ended so well for us last time? Maven chuckles through Ivorum's bond.
But if you'd like to return and pretend you're doing it to save some nameless soldiers, then I'm happy to welcome you back.
I thought Ilara killed your ability to dream. I snap back.
No, Maven, I'm talking about what the Scarlet Guard left behind on Bracken's base.
Ivorum's face falls, matching the Boy King's.
What?
Farley grins, crouching next to me, addressing Ivorum, and therefore Maven.
The Scarlet Guard has a difficult time trusting Silvers, especially ones kept in check the way Bracken was. It was only a matter of time before something happened and he decided to stop taking orders from the people holding his children.
Who am I speaking to now?
Maven demands through Ivorum.
Oh, I'm hurt you don't remember me, but it's General Farley now, so maybe I sound different.
Ah, yes. Ivorum clucks his tongue. How foolish of me to forget the woman who led a wolf like me into her pack of particularly stupid sheep.
Farley smiles like she's just been served a particularly delicious meal.
These stupid sheep wired your base with explosives.
For a second, the room goes deathly silent. Tiberius looks up, his face twisted in alarm.
Do you have any idea how dangerous that was?
Plenty, she snaps, not looking away from Ivorum.
Don't repeat that.
He barely nods.
Well, Maven? I ask, pasting on a sweet smile. You can recall whoever you sent into the swamps after our people and try to search the base before we obliterate it, or you can release the prisoners and we'll tell you exactly how close you're standing to a bomb.
Explosives don't frighten me.
They would if you cared about the soldiers sworn to your crown.
Tiberius growls, prowling close to my shoulder. His forearm brushes against me, sending a flare of heat down my spine. A shadow seems to pass over Iberum as he relays the prince's words and presence.
Good of you to step forward, brother, Maven whispers. I thought you'd never find the spine to speak to me. Name the place and we'll see exactly who has the stronger spine.
Tiberius fires back, his growl feral and unchecked. In reply, Iberum just wags a finger back and forth.
Let's leave the posturing for your inevitable surrender, Cal. When you have to kneel before Norta, the Lakelands, and Piedmont.
He rattles off each country with a spreading grin. I feel the weight stacking against us, the wall getting higher and higher. Farley puts a hand on my shoulder, holding me back to my chair, bidding me to wait. Finally, Iberum moves, crossing his arms and shifting his weight. His body language is all Maven, dedicated to a performance. Now he isn't wearing the false mantle of the young man called to duty. He dons the mask of the heartless, impenetrable son of Alara Mirandis, someone who cares only for power and nothing else. It is an act as much as Marina was to me.
How many bombs did you say, General?
He uses her rank to throw her off, but Farley is more difficult to rattle.
I didn't.
Hmm, Maven murmurs.
Well, Bracken won't take kindly to any further damage done to his installation, though we bought enough goodwill returning his children, so he might not mind.
I don't know exactly where the explosives might be, only that the guard planted them some time ago, buried them below the roads, the runways, and most of the administrative buildings, where they could do the most damage, not just to enemy soldiers, but to the base itself. They're tuned to a specific frequency, triggered, and ready to blow. A perfect and deadly piece of foresight.
The decision is yours, Maven.
I answer.
The prisoners for your base.
Iberum mimics Maven's grin.
And this new blood, of course. He says, though I'd like to keep him, if you don't mind. This is much easier than sending you letters.
Not part of the deal. Pouting, Iberum huffs.
You make things so difficult sometimes.
It's my specialty. At my side, Tiberius scoffs quietly. I'm sure he agrees. We wait in blistering silence, hanging on every breath from Iberum's body. He turns in his seat, looking back and forth, pantomiming Maven as he paces. Farley looms above me, a storm cloud as much as I am.
Where would you like them released?
He says finally. Silently, Farley punches the air with a pair of brutal, triumphant jabs. I'm reminded of her young age. Only 22. Just a few years older than me.
East Gate, Farley replies, and I try to keep my triumph in check. The swamps.
Dusk.
I hear Maven's confusion.
That's it? Tiberius is just as puzzled. He glances sidelong at Farley.
That's no rescue, he murmurs, gesturing for Iberum not to relay his words. General, we need to get drop jets in place, a clear path, a ceasefire while we evacuate the prisoners and those who manage to escape.
She slices a hand through the air.
No need, Kalor. You keep forgetting the Scarlet Guard isn't the kind of army you're used to.
Proud, she plants her hands on her hips. There's already infrastructure in place, and we have boots on the ground in the swamps already. Moving Reds across enemy territory is sort of what we're best at.
Good to hear, Tiberius grinds out. But I don't like being left out of the loop. We work better with everyone on even ground.
You call this even ground? Farley says, gesturing between him and us. His blood, our blood. His rank, our rank. The canyon between a silver born to be a king and reds born to nothing at all. His eyes flicker, dancing from her down to me. He towers over me in my seat, his height exaggerated by the distance. So much space between us, and yet none at all. Though it pains him, Tiberius bites his tongue, and a muscle feathers in his cheek as he wrenches his gaze from mine. I see the struggle in him, and I expect him to push, keep arguing. To my surprise, he settles back, gesturing for us to continue.
In front of me, Ibrahim heaves a breath. He touches the scar on his chin, brown skin knobbled white between the curls of his black beard. Then he brushes the flesh below each of his eyes, where the scars of his brothers lie.
The king lingers, thinking, Miss Barrow. Tell him he won't be able to use us this way again, he says, now pleading, or this wretched young man will keep my brother as his prisoner, as a channel to you and his majesty.
Of course, I reply, bobbing my head, eager to save Rash from becoming another new blood pet.
We'll know if you keep the new blood maven, and if you do, the deal is broken.
The responding voice is bitter, but unsurprised.
But I've missed our conversations. You keep me sane, Mare,
he tells me, trying for dark humor. It lands poorly.
We both know that isn't true, and you will never communicate with me through him again.
He scowls. Then we'll have to find new ways to talk. Above me, Tiberius lifts a finger, signaling for Ibrahim's attention.
If you want to talk, no one will stop you, Maven, he says, and the new blood relays. Wars are fought with diplomacy as much as weaponry. Meet us on neutral ground, face to face.
So eager to negotiate surrender, Cal? Maven taunts, waving away the offer.
Now, General, the explosives?
Farley nods.
You'll be given their locations after we can verify that our people are in the swamps and out of harm's way.
I won't be held responsible for anything an alligator does. At this, she truly laughs.
It's a pity you have no soul, Maven Kalor. You could have been someone worth saving.
Tiberius shifts, unsettled. If someone can fix him, isn't it worth it to try? He asked me that a few weeks ago. Skin to skin. It feels like another life. It isn't a subject I care for. There is no fixing Maven. No redemption for the boy king, for the false person we both loved. We can't save him from himself. And I don't think I'll ever have the heart to tell Tiberius that. As broken as Maven's ability to love is, Tiberius's is that much stronger. To a fault, perhaps. It makes him cling too tight.
First, you burn Corvium. Now, you threaten the Piedmont base.
Maven sneers through the bond.
The Scarlet Guard is so talented at destruction, but then it's always easier to tear down what is already built.
Especially when what you build is rotten to the core,
Farley sneers back.
Eastgate, the swamps, dusk, I repeat, or the base burns beneath you.
My foot twitches beneath me. How many are on the base now? Soldiers oathed to Maven and Bracken and Iris. Silvers, probably. And Reds, too. Their shield wall of innocence following orders. At first I tell myself not to think about it. War is difficult enough without weighing how many lives hang in the balance. But closing my eyes isn't the answer either. No matter how hard it is to see, I have to look. Even if I have to make the hard decision, I must do it with my eyes open. No more pushing down the pain or the guilt. I have to feel it if I want to get through it.
Very well, Maven growls.
Again, I picture him standing outside his cell, white-faced in the dim light, his eyes rimmed with the usual shadows of exhaustion and doubt.
I am a man of my word.
The familiar refrain smarts like his brand, drawing out a dozen harsh memories of his letters and his promise. Slowly, I nod. You're a man of your word. We leave Ibrahim with instructions to find us if his brother isn't freed with the rest, before hurrying along the corridors of Ridge House, trying to navigate our way to the Samos throne room. Tiberius is less helpful than he should be, his mind clearly elsewhere, with his brother in Piedmont, I suspect. I do my best to keep up with his long strides and Farley's, but I keep bumping into his back as he slows, lost in thought. We're already late, I grumble, putting a hand to the small of his back on instinct, shoving him forward. He jumps at the contact, as if burned by my touch. His larger hand covers mine when he recovers, pulling my fingers away. Then he drops them quickly as he halts, turning to face me. Farley keeps on, outpacing us with an exasperated groan. "Fight when we have the time," she calls, urging us to keep up. He ignores her, glaring down at me.
"You were going to speak to him without me."
"Do I need your permission to talk to Maven?"
"He's my brother, Mare. You know what he still means to me,"
he whispers, almost begging. I try not to soften in the face of his pain. It almost works. "You have to forget who you thought he was." It kindles something in him, a deeper anger, a desperation.
"Don't tell me how to feel. Don't tell me to turn my back on him."
Then he straightens, pulling back so I have to crane my neck to meet his gaze.
"Besides confronting him alone, just the two of you," he looks over his shoulder at Farley, "it isn't wise."
"Which is why I sent for you," Farley snaps harshly. "We need to go. That took long enough, and the council started 20 minutes ago. If Samos and your grandmother are scheming, I want to be there."
"And what about Iris?" Tiberius says, recovering.
He braces his hands on his hips, broadening his frame, to cut off any escape if I try to slip around him. He knows my tricks too well.
"What was all that about dogs biting?"
I hesitate, weighing my options. I could always lie. It might be better to lie. "Something Iris said before, when I was still at Whitefire," I admit. "She knew I was a pet to Maven, a lapdog, and she told me all dogs bite. It was her way of communicating that she knew I would turn on him if I could." The words catch, but I force them out. Why, I can't say. "So will she." Instead of thanking me, Tiberius seems to darken.
"And you think Maven wouldn't catch that?"
I can only shrug. I think right now he doesn't care. He needs her alliance. There's only today and tomorrow in his eyes.
"I can understand that," he mutters under his breath, so only I can hear.
"I'm sure you do." He heaves another sigh, running a hand through his short hair. I wish he would let it grow into dark waves again. He'd look more handsome, less rigid, less like a king.
"Do we tell them what just happened?"
he asks, pointing a thumb back toward the room. I frown. I would rather not retell our conversation to a larger audience, especially one that includes the Samos brood. "If we do, we risk Rash and Iberum. Volo would enjoy using that particular advantage if he could."
"I agree, but it is an advantage to be able to speak to him, watch him."
He lowers his voice, gauging my reaction, letting me make the decision. "Leave him in peace. We can relay with the Scarlet Guard on the ground, get our people back." He nods along.
"Of course."
"No word about Cameron," I add, wincing as I say her name. "She went back to Piedmont to be with her brother when we went on to Montfort, chasing peace instead of war. And war found her again." Tiberius turns thoughtful, sympathetic even. Not for show, but truly. I try not to look at his handsome features as he looms above me.
"She'll be okay," he says, just for me. "Can't imagine anyone taking her down."
Iberum didn't mention seeing her among the prisoners, but he didn't think she was among the dead, either. I can only hope she's among the ones who escaped, hiding in the swamps, slowly making her way back to us. Besides, Cameron can kill a man as easily as I can. More easily. Any silver hunter would find her to be dangerous prey, with her ability to smother the strongest of their powers. She must have escaped. I will entertain no other possibility. I simply can't. Especially because I need her for what I have planned. Farley might pop a blood vessel if we keep her waiting any longer.
"I would prefer not to see that,"
Tiberius grumbles after me.
15. Evangeline. Annabelle stalls with such talent as we wait for her chronologically impaired grandson. I'm torn between asking for a lesson and skewering her to the wall with the steel of my throne. There are maybe a dozen people in the throne room, only those necessary for a war council. Red and Silver, Scarlet Guard and agents of Montfort alongside noble houses of the Rift and Rebel Norda. No matter how many times I see it, I can hardly get used to the sight. Neither can my parents. Today, Mother coils on her throne of emeralds like one of her snakes. She sinks back into black silk and rough gems, looking incomplete without some threatening predator pet at her knee. The panther must be indisposed today. She sneers while Annabelle spins her wheels. Father, on the other hand, sits in rapt attention, his acute focus locked entirely on Annabelle even as she steps back, trying to make her squirm. The head of House Laraland does not, to her credit. I'm a magnetron. I know steel when I see it. And she has steel in her bones. Tiberius the Seventh needs a capital, a place to plant his flag. She pauses, pacing for effect as she surveys the throne room. I want to scream, "Get on with it, old woman!" What she should really do is go find Cal, wherever he might be, and drag him back here by the ears. The Piedmont base is lost, and this is a meeting of his own war council, not to mention my father's court. Making us wait isn't just rude, it's politically stupid, and a waste of my own precious time. He's probably off arguing with Mare again, pretending not to look at her lips while he does it. The prince is terribly predictable, and I hope the pair of them will boil over into some not-so-secret, secret relationship once more. Will I be expected to guard the door? I sneer to myself. In a flash, I envision the life he wants for us all, the life he would subject all of us to. The crown on my head, his heart in her hand, my children threatened every second by any child she might have, my days spent bending to his will, no matter how gentle it might be, no matter how many days he might let me spend with my Elaine, as long as he can spend his with Mare. If only he wanted her more. If only I could make him want her more. But, as I told Mare back in Corvium, Cal isn't the abdicating kind. You weren't either, I remind myself, until you had a taste of the other side. At the thought, my insides flip, with excitement, with hope, and with exhaustion. I'm already annoyed by the prospect of tangling myself up with Cal and Mare more than I already am, even if it's for my own happiness. Stop complaining, Samos. When General Farley and Mare finally enter the room, with Cal on their heels, I sigh to myself. Mare Barrow is not unfortunate-looking, but she's no lady. Cal must like that sort of thing. A rougher edge. Warmth, dirt under fingernails, a rotten temper. I don't see the appeal. But he must. Ah, Annabelle says, turning gracefully on her heel. Your Majesty. Her face relaxes in relief as she beckons Cal to join her before the Samos thrones. The rest of the chamber looks on.
So kind of you to join us, King Tiberius, my father says. He runs a hand through his silver beard, pulling at the strands. I'm sure you've been made aware of our dire situation.
Cal sweeps into a low bow, surprising us. Kings and queens of the blood do not bow, not even to each other. Still, he does it.
My apologies, I was detained, he says, offering nothing else, and giving us no opportunity to ask further as he waves Farley forward. I believe General Farley has some good news, at least. Weighed against the loss of our foothold in Piedmont? Father scoffs. As well as any leverage we had over Prince Bracken, it must be very good news.
I consider over 100 of our people saved from Piedmont to be good news, sir, she says, also stooping into a quick, pitiful bow. The Scarlet Guard and our Montfortin allies left only a skeleton garrison behind in Piedmont. There were a few hundred soldiers left behind at the base when Bracken struck. Right now, according to our intelligence, At least a third have made it into the swamps. The Scarlet Guard has contingents all over the region. We are more than able to retrieve and transport those who escaped to safety. How many dead do you estimate? Annabelle says, now standing to the side with her hands clasped. 100, we think, she forces out, as if she can run right past the thought. But it seems to catch up to her as she repeats more slowly. 100 dead. We lost more in Corvium, I say, tapping my fingers in time. A hard trade, to be sure, I add, feigning sympathy before I send the red woman into a rage spiral.
It will be difficult going forward without the base,
Ptolemus offers, making the painfully obvious point. Sometimes I think he just wants to hear himself talk, even in situations like this.
Yes, that's true, Cal offers. We still have the rift and all that entails, but we've lost two of our conquests in so many weeks. First, Corvium.
We chose to destroy Corvium. We didn't lose it, Mayor puts in, eyeing him with venom. I'd wager she's glad to be rid of that city. Cal nods in begrudging agreement.
And now, Piedmont, he continues. It doesn't exactly present the image of strength, especially to any houses aligned to Maven who might still be swayed.
Mother angles on her throne, her knuckles glinting with a ransom of green gems.
What of Montfort?
She raises an eyebrow, searching the room. I'm told you were successful in procuring their army.
I don't count my soldiers before they form up, Cal shoots back, harsher than he should be. I trust Premier Davidson will deliver what his government promises, but I won't make decisions based on resources we can't see yet.
What you need is a capital, Annabelle says, circling the conversation back to her original song and dance. She paces, her red and orange regalia matching the light outside as it shifts toward sunset. The city of Delphi will provide. The seat of House Larilan will support the rightful king. Cal avoids her gaze.
That's true, but...
But, she snaps to him, stopping in her tracks. He throws his shoulders wide, self-assured.
It's too easy.
Like a true grandmother, Annabelle pats him on the arm with the manner of someone teaching a toddler a syrupy life lesson. Nothing in life is truly easy, but you take the breaks you manage to find, Tiberius.
I mean, it says nothing,
he answers, extricating himself from her grasp.
Not to the people of Norda, not to our allies, and certainly not to our enemies. It's an empty move, an expected move. Delphi is already mine in all but name, correct? I simply have to raise my flag and proclaim it.
Yes, she says with a blink. Why throw away such a gift? He sighs, a little exasperated, and I share the feeling.
I'm not. The gift is already given. You're right. We do need another stronghold, preferably in Norta. Another victory to prove our strength. Put fear in the Lakelands and Piedmont, as there is already fear in Maven.
Where do you suggest? I ask, leaning forward, if only to move along his proposal and end this miserable show. He nods at me.
Harbor Bay.
That was your mother's favorite palace, Annabelle mutters at his side, forgetting herself. Cal doesn't respond, as if he doesn't hear her. And governed by families loyal to Maven.
It's strategic, he offers.
General Farley narrows her eyes. It's another siege, and another battle that could get hundreds of us killed.
It has Fort Patriot, Cal fires back. It services the army, the air fleet, and the Navy Armada.
He ticks each one off on his fingers. His fervor is palpable, almost contagious. I can understand why he was made a general at such a young age. Maybe if I were a simple soldier, if I didn't know any better, I would willingly follow such a man into the jaws of death.
We can choke off a large piece of Maven's military, and perhaps win some of it in the process. At the very least, we'll be able to replace what we lost in Piedmont. Weapons, transports, jets. It's all there for the taking. In the city itself is a Scarlet Guard,
hotspot. Father arches one sharp eyebrow. He is almost grinning, a ferocious sight.
A wise decision, he says.
King Volo's agreement seems to take Cal by surprise, but it shouldn't. I know my father and see the hunger in him, the lust for power that he always keeps close. I bet he already dreams of Harbor Bay laid bare, Asamo's flag raised over the conquered city.
Maven has taken a fort from us. We'll take a city from him.
Cal dips his head.
Yes, exactly.
If you can take it, Mare replies, looking over her shoulder at him. Her brown and gray hair spins with her momentum, gleaming with a reddish hue in the sunset. He tilts his head, eyes narrowed.
What are you saying?
Attack Harbor Bay. Attempt to overthrow the city. It's a good risk and we should try, she says. But even if we fail, we can still strike a real blow to Maven's forces. In spite of myself, I find this intriguing. I smooth my skirts, rippled sheets of speckled silver and white silk, as I lean toward her. How, Barrow? She seems almost grateful, and shows me her teeth in what could be a reluctant smile. Split open, Newtown. The techie slum outside Harbor Bay. Lose the Reds. It's a manufacturing hub, and it fuels Norta as much as any silver fort. If we hit Newtown, Greytown, Marytown... Again, Father is taken off guard.
You want to get rid of the tech centers?
He sputters, blinking at her like she told him to cut out his own beating heart. Mayor Barrow stands firm beneath his confounded gaze. Yes. Annabelle eyes Mayor in disbelief, almost laughing.
And what about after this war is done, Miss Barrow? Will you pay to rebuild them?
Mare almost bites off a chunk of her own tongue to keep back a sudden, unchecked retort. She takes a breath, willing herself to something within the realm of calm. If destroying them means victory, she says slowly, ignoring Annabelle's questions. Winning the country? Cal's eyes shift and he steadily nods his head. Agreeing because she's right, or because he's still a lovesick puppy.
Breaking up even one tech center will greatly disrupt Maven's ability to fight back, and it will spread unrest through his supporters. If the Reds see us as liberators, that can only help us, he says. Add that to taking over Fort Patriot. He could lose control of everything north of the bay, all the way to the Lakelander border.
Thoughtful, he looks to his grandmother, opening his stance to her.
Cut off the entire region, and sandwich Maven between our already loyal Delphi, the Rift, and our new conquest.
I imagine Norda in my head, or Norda as she was a year ago. Lines carve across her lands, like a cook slicing up pieces of pie. One chunk to us, two more to Cal, and the rest. My eyes linger on the Red General and Mayor Barrow, and I think of that insufferable premier 1,000 miles away. Which piece will they take? I know what they want, at least. The whole damn pie.
Ptolemus makes a show of mulling over my proposition.
He runs a finger around the rim of his water glass, listening to the crystal sing. The sound is haunting, an ethereal echo weaving through our dinner. The sky behind him is blood red against his silhouette. My brother is strong-jawed, broad, with my father's long nose and mother's tiny rosebud mouth. He looks more like her in this light, with the growing shadows gathering beneath his eyes, in the hollows of his cheeks and throat. His clothes are fresh and casual for him, clean, white linen, light enough for the summer season. Elaine watches him play the glass with distaste, one side of her mouth curled into the beginnings of a sneer. The waning light gleams in her hair, giving her a ruby halo finer than any crown. She drains her own wine, staining her lips with berry, grape, and plum. I refrain for the moment,
leaving my wine glass full and undisturbed. Usually, a quiet dinner away from my parents and the prying eyes of an assembled court is an excuse to drink as much as I like, but we have business to attend to.
It's a foolish plan, Evangeline. We don't have time to play matchmaker,
Ptolemus mutters, his fingers gliding to a halt on the crystal rim.
Harper Bay could be the end of us all.
I cluck my tongue. Don't be a coward. You know Father wouldn't risk you or me in an ill-fated siege. We are well cared for investments, Tolly. His legacy depends on our survival. Whether Cal wins Harbor Bay or not is of no interest to me. We do have time, at least, Elaine offers. She regards me with dark eyes that glimmer like starfall across a cornflower sky. There can be no movement without the Montfort armies, and we still have to outfit our own soldiers to build up for the siege. I slip my hand under the table, feeling the smooth softness of silk on her knee. This is true. And I'm not suggesting we ignore the war, Tolly. Just divide our attention. Look elsewhere when we can. Nudge pieces on the chessboard.
Nudge pieces into bed, you mean?
Ptolemus says with a dry grin. He moves his hand from his water to the stout glass of biting clear liquor and ice he's drinking.
You think I can influence Mayor Barrow without getting my throat slit?
He asks, tossing back a fiery gulp. He winces, hissing air through his teeth.
I think it's best I stay away from her.
I agree with that, I answer. Barrow promised to let my brother live. It's a promise I trust less and less every day. But you can keep an eye on Cal. I thought he was immovable, completely dedicated to winning Norda, but we may have an opportunity to stop that. My brother throws back another blistering swig.
We aren't exactly friends.
I shrug. But close enough to it. At least you were a year ago.
And what a year it has been,
he mutters, inspecting his reflection in the flat of his dinner knife. His face has not changed. His beauty is undiminished by war. But so many other things are different now. A new king, a new country, new crowns for us both. And a mountain of problems to go with each. The tumultuous year has been worth the cost, at least to me. A year ago, I was training harder than I ever had, preparing for the inevitable Queen's Trial. I could barely sleep for fear of losing, even when victory was all but guaranteed. My life then was decided, and I reveled in knowing what was to come. In hindsight, I feel stupid and manipulated, seeing myself as the doll I was, pushed toward a boy I could never love. And here I am again, trapped in the same place I've always been. But now I know better. I can fight it. And maybe I can make Cal see reason the way I did, see what our worlds are, the strings we all dance upon. Ptolemus picks around his specially made meal of lean, barely seasoned chicken, wilted vegetables, and pale fish meat. It lies mostly untouched. Usually he wolfs down his bland, healthy foods, as if eating them quickly can disguise the lack of taste. Elaine is quite the opposite. Her plate is clean, showing no evidence of the rack of wine-soaked lamb we shared. Indeed, she says. Her voice is quiet and measured. I tried to read her thoughts on her face, her carefully worn expression of thoughtfulness. Is she remembering our lives a year ago, when we thought we would be happy beneath the Norton throne together, living in a future built on our secrets? As if we were ever truly a secret to anyone with eyes. What about me? Elaine prods, putting her hand over my own. Her skin is the perfect balance of warmth against mine. What part will I play in this? You don't have to do much of anything, I answer almost too quickly. She puts her hand over mine. Don't be stupid, Eve. Very well, I grit out. Do as you have before, I suppose. Shadows are perfect spies, well suited to the intrigues of a royal court. To listen, to watch, safe behind a shield of invisibility. I don't like the prospect of using her in any capacity that might be dangerous, but like she said, we have time. We're at Ridge House. She wouldn't be any safer if I locked her up in my rooms. Not exactly a bad idea. Elaine smirks a little and pushes away her plate, half in jest. Her nose wrinkles. Should I go now? I tighten my grip on her hand, smirking. You can finish off the wine at least. I'm not completely heartless. With a smile that stops my breath and leaves my pulse racing, she leans into me, her eyes drifting lazily to my lips. I know exactly how much heart you have. Across the table, Ptolemus finishes his drink, rattling the ice.
I'm right here, he grumbles, averting his eyes.
We have a week, at least, if not two, before Davidson and his army return. Enough time to do what I can, with the added advantage of my own territory. Cal and Mayor want each other, no matter how many obstacles might stand in the way. He requires only a very little push. If anything, a single word from Mayor would send him scurrying to her bedroom. Mayor, on the other hand, will be infinitely more difficult, married as she is to her pride, her cause, and that constant, unflagging rage she keeps burning in her chest. Of course, shoving the pair of them back together is only the first half of the endeavor. It's getting Cal to realize, as I have, the weight of a heart, and how much heavier it is than a crown. A small part of me wonders if this is impossible. Cal might never wake up the way I did. His choices could be set in stone. But that can't be true. I see the way he looks at her, and I won't give up so easily. I only wish I could solve all this with my own two fists and a knife. That might even be enjoyable. Quite honestly, anything would be more enjoyable than what I'm doing now, prowling through Ridge House at dusk, searching for Mayor Barrow. This is a chore and a bore. Elaine is gone, somewhere on the other side of the estate. Keeping an eye on General Farley while Ptolemus works through his evening routine in the training area. A routine that nicely aligns with Cal's own schedule. The would-be king is oh so married to his workouts, especially now that he can't burn off his energy with a certain lightning girl. I pass through the gallery halls, dragging my fingers across statues of reflective steel and polished chrome as I go. Each one responds to my touch, rippling like water disturbed on a still pond. Outside, the sky purples, and stars prick to life across the western horizon. The city of Petaris glows in the distance, several miles away, a reminder of the world still marching on. Reds and common silvers now living under the spreading shadow of war. I wonder what that must be like, to read about battles and hear of cities torn apart, and know you have no part in the conflict, no influence, no power should war come to knock on your own door. And it certainly will. This war has many sides, and there's no way to stop what has already begun. Norda will be a rotting carcass one day, with the Rift, the Lakelands, Montfort, Piedmont, and whoever else is left all howling over her corpse. I step onto the upper terraces, facing into the eastern darkness. A chill hovers on the air, and I think we might face a summer cold front before the week is out. Barrow isn't alone when I find her, to my chagrin. She looks up at the stars while her red boy stretches out at her side, long limbs splayed without thought for appearance. He seems a tangle of blonde hair and bronze, sun-damaged skin. Killorn glances at me first, pointing his rounded chin in my direction.
We have an audience.
Hello, Evangeline, Mayor replies. Her knees are drawn up to her chest. She doesn't move, her face tipped to the sky and the growing starlight. To what do we owe this honor, Your Highness? She drawls. I chuckle and pause to lean against the railing edging the terrace tile, biting to the last. I find myself in need of distraction.
Mare shakes her head amused. I thought that's what Elaine is for.
She has a life of her own, I muse airily, forcing a shrug. I can't expect her to live at my beck and call.
You spend all your time pretending not to pine for her, and now here you are in the same place again. But you're bothering me instead.
Shrewd, she turns her gaze on me for a second, her brown eyes black against the deepening night sky. Then she looks back at the stars.
What do you want to know?
Nothing at all. I don't care where you and Cal scampered off to today, or why you both were so incredibly late to a meeting about the survival of your own people. At her side, the red boy tenses, his brows knitting together. Mare tries not to rise to the bait or the implication. She waves a hand, dismissive.
It wasn't important.
Well, if you ever need assistance with your unimportant doings, there are a few passages I can show you. Ways to get around the ridge unseen. I tip my head, surveying her as she pretends not to listen to me. Cal sleeps in the east wing, near my rooms, in case you're interested. Her head snaps up.
I am not.
Of course, I reply. The red boy glowers, his eyes a dark green, the color of my mother's stormiest emeralds.
Is this what you call distraction? Taunting Mare?
Not at all. I was wondering if Mare felt like sparring a bit.
She balks.
I beg your pardon?
For old time's sake. She huffs, as if annoyed. But I see the familiar twitch in her. The need. A coil in the pit of her stomach, begging to be unwound. Barrow looks at her feet, blinking slowly. She runs one hand over the other, smoothing her fingers against her palm. Imagining the lightning, no doubt. There is a particular pleasure in using our abilities for sport rather than survival.
I've almost beaten you twice, Evangeline, Mare says.
I grin. Third time's the charm. She glares up at me, annoyed at the hunger inside herself.
Fine, she forces through gritted teeth. One match.
Cal is also in the training arena. Not that Mare or Killorn knows it, though. The red boy follows us wordlessly, fuming, but he does nothing to stop Barrow when I lead her into the specially made chamber. The walls are glass, much like the rest of the ridge. In the morning, it enjoys a full view of the sunrise, perfect for early sessions. Now it looks out on the darkness, a vague, bruising blue fading to black. Ptolemus and Cal occupy different ends of the training floor, ignoring each other as men do. My brother steadily works through a rotation of push-ups, his back straight and lean. Ren perches nearby, seated in the raised viewing area. She must be the healer on duty to attend to anyone on the floor. But her attention is firmly fixed on Ptolemus and his flexing muscles. I could probably spear Cal through the middle, and she wouldn't blink an eye. The would-be king faces away from us at first, running a towel over his hair and his sweaty, flushed face. I watch Mare go stock still next to me, as if frozen solid. Her eyes widen, running over his figure. I can only grimace, noting the damp material clinging to Cal's back and shoulders. Maybe if I felt some attraction to him, or to any man for that matter, I might understand exactly why Mare looks like she's going to pass out. At least this part of the plan is working. Barrow clearly has no objections to Cal's body. This way, I say to her, taking her by the arm. Cal spins at my voice, towel still in hand. He startles at the sight of us. Well, the sight of her.
We're almost finished, he manages to sputter.
Take your time. It doesn't make a difference to me. Mare replies, her voice and expression decidedly neutral. She lets me lead her away without protest, but her hand shifts, her arm moving quickly. Her fingers dig into my flesh, nails biting and warning.
Killorn,
I hear Cal say behind us, greeting the red boy with what sounds like a handshake. Ptolemus looks up from his spot on the floor,
not breaking his pace. I give him the slightest nod, pleased by our machinations. His eyes slide past me, though, to rest on Mare instead.